Welcome to HR Voices. A podcast for independent HR and people professionals and the businesses they support. HR Voices is brought to you by the expert team at HR Independence Limited. We hope you enjoy.
Hello and welcome to HR Voices podcast. I'm your host, Mary Asante, and with me here today is my co-host, Charlotte Offrey. And we have with us today our amazing, fantastic award winner, Laura Riley, at the recent HRI Awards ceremony. So congratulations, Laura.
Thank you very much, Mary. Thank you.
So we are continuing with our series on your HR and people consultancy journey. So we've explored different aspects of it. So we've explored, for example, how people have followed the associate module to grow their businesses. Others have gone down the employee route to grow their businesses. Others through the partnership route. And then other people have worked as associates for others when we're starting and then gone on to grow their own. We've also spoken to reward and benefits consultants, L&D consultants, and also different aspects. Then building on that, we are speaking to amazing and fantastic award winners to showcase examples of how good look at like. And so today we have the pleasure of speaking to Laura about her journey and to share with you. So I will ask Laura to introduce herself a bit further and tell us a bit more about herself.
Thanks very much, Mary. It's interesting what you say about different models, because I can honestly say I think we've tried and done all of them. And I'll expand on that in a minute as to what I mean. But I first started out as an associate. I'd worked for one of the very big employment law and HR consultancies, shall we say, very notorious. And I'd gone back in-house at that point. And a lady who was a HR consultant that lived very close to me had said to me, "Oh, I know you like doing X, Y, and Z. So would you like to do some for me?" And I didn't want to lose my hand in the consultancy world. I went back in-house for different reasons, but one of which was to do more employee relations work. Because in my role at the consultancy, I was pigeonholed to doing employment documentation, which, don't get me wrong, I loved. I could write a clause on anything in the world for you, but it does narrow your expertise into being very niche. And I think you can lose your confidence on other things if you don't end up practicing them regularly. So I went back in-house. She said to me, "Would you like to do a little bit of this?" So I started picking it up at the weekend and didn't do it every weekend, but it was just as and when. And then it sort of grew and grew, because then somebody recommended me to someone else. And then I got a query through LinkedIn. And I sort of rumbled along with that in the background, working for a couple of consultancies, you know, sort of smaller ones that needed a bit of associate support, and carried on working full time, because I've always been that kind of, I need the financial security, I've got a mortgage to pay, etc. And never had the guts to kind of go it alone. Anyway, kind of did that for a few years, and it sort of grew bigger and bigger. And then I was pregnant with my fifth child, and I thought, I have an opportunity now to kind of take stock of things, think about what I want for the future. And I've always been entrepreneurial in my approach and everything I've done. I've been entrepreneurial, and I decided that that was the make or break for me. You know, I really need to go it alone, and I need to give it a really good go. And do you know what? If it doesn't work, I'll just go back in house again, but I've got to try it. And I couldn't kind of get rid of that itch. And as I became more and more pregnant, it was there and there, and I couldn't do anything about it because I was pregnant. And as soon as I had my baby, I decided at that point that I was going to set up alone and use my maternity leave to do that. So that's what I did. So I spoke to a lady who was retiring, and we arranged a handover of those clients, and I set up Taurus HR and became limited that September. And I set it up with two things in mind. First of all, was almost providing that kind of halfway house between providing HR advice and also legal advice, and giving clients options whereby they didn't have to pay. You know, it's not always necessary for a solicitor to look at everything, but sometimes you need somebody with a bit more of a legal hat than somebody that's pure HR. So I kind of set it up to bridge that gap. And I used a couple of associates at first to sort of start to grow me. And then I've moved into the position where I've now taken on employees, and we're continuing to grow through that model and also partnerships as well. So I literally have done a little bit of everything.
Excellent. I'm almost glad that you are kind of the final speaker or guest in this series, because you demonstrate very clearly how flexibility and versatility within your business can be achieved. Because one of the pleasures of being a small business is that you are small enough to be able to, should be agile enough to be able to respond to change. So you kind of go, actually, I've tried this, it's not working, let's try something else. And you've demonstrated how a lot of consultants start up, which is, okay, I may be in a full-time job, but I start this in the background and see how it goes. Or I may go part-time because I need a financial security and start doing bits and bobs here and there, and really build up to the point where I feel confident enough to take a leap. You've also touched on the fact that for a lot of HR consultants, so childcare and other caring responsibilities can be a key driver to them, say, leaving a full-time role to start in their own business or consultancy that will give them that flexibility. And other times it's just that itch of, actually, I've always wanted to do this, so it's now or never, and I'm going to give this a go. So thank you very much for that. I think fantastic, amazing demonstration of how practically all these can work in different scenarios, given different circumstances. So yeah, well done, and thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
I think it's really interesting, because I think if you were to map out the perfect consultant's journey, actually that would probably be it. You know, the different stages and the different steps of growth. And I take my hat off to you trying to do it with 5 children. My goodness me, I've had to struggle enough with 2. So I think when I saw your entry for the award and I was reading it, I was thinking, 5 children? My goodness me, how does that work? So, you know, I think the fact that you've been studying as well, and, you know, running your business, I mean, absolutely, you are an emerging talent in the field. So I think that's really great to see. So what would you say in that journey, what has been the greatest challenge for you?
There's been a couple. I think one of the biggest challenges was taking my last 2 Silex exams while I was pregnant, heavily pregnant. I'm one of those really unfortunate people who gets hyperemesis with every pregnancy. And I've done it 5 times, so I know the drill and I know how rubbish it feels. But generally, it sort of tapers off for me about 20, 22 weeks, give or take. With this pregnancy, I felt quite nauseated for quite a while, longer than that. And it was the week where we had the 40 degree heat. Now, I am working, and I work now, on the top floor of the house. So we had our house loft conversion in lockdown because everything was working from home. And I realised that actually, from a focus point of view, I really liked working from home. Loved the interaction with people, but loved to kind of retreat back to somewhere really quiet. And with 5 children, you do really need an extra floor just to kind of separate you with the noise. So I was up here in 40 degree heat, melting with just a fan. I was 37 weeks pregnant. I had my hospital bag in the room across the way, and I sat there and sat my tort and civil litigation exams. And it was a remote hearing, well, remote exam rather. And they sort of made you take pictures of your ears to check there's no earpieces in. You had to have cameras on you at all times. I have to apologise if whoever played mine back is listening to this, because I swore so many times. I was hot, I was pregnant, I was feeling rubbish. And I'm sat there and I remember sitting there thinking, if I pass this, I'll literally fall over because I don't know how I'm going to manage it. I had you know, brain fog and all kinds of things. And then I got my results after the baby was born, and I got a merit and a distinction. And I honestly, to this day, don't know how I managed to do it. I must have just literally kind of shut down and just focused only on that. But that was a huge achievement for me, because that kind of finished off my Silex qualification that I really wanted to do. And also the rules were changing with Silex. So there was a race against time to finish it under the old scheme. So yeah, I think that's probably one of the biggest achievements. As much as holding everything together has been one, that's one that does stand out as being really challenging.
Well, well done and congratulations on your achievements. I think sort of you demonstrated sort of good resilience there in terms of being faced with different challenges and extreme sort of conditions, etc., but nonetheless sticking through it and coming to the other side of it with merits and distinction. So that is amazing and that is fantastic. And I think my next question is, how do you juggle sort of family life with sort of five children within your family and sort of your work and being in charge of your business?
Good question. So a good friend and client of mine said to me, Laura, you should grow and build your business when you have the energy. So when I took this on, I knew it wasn't going to be a let's just sort of dabble at it and let's see where it goes. I wasn't in a position where I could do that. I'm the breadwinner in my family. And if I don't work and bill, we don't eat. It literally is as simple as that. So the pressure was always on, but the childcare is a huge, could be a huge issue because the five children, although one of them is grown up, so he's self-sufficient, there's still kind of four people that are reliant on me doing various things for them. Now, my husband is a stay-at-home, so he does a lot of that. And that is his strength, definitely not mine. I'm good at going out and you can put me in front of a contract and I would pick that over the ABCs any day. And it's just how I'm wired up and we're all wired up differently. So he's been a great help with regards to sort of the house stuff and the children. You know, it hasn't been easy because I think the difficulty then for me is because I love my work so much is to tear myself away from that and still make time for the family. So I do have some rules that I impose. So, no phones at the dinner table, that is family time, unless it is obviously an emergency. When I go on holiday, so I did my first holiday this year as a business owner. And I think my learning from that was it took me a week longer than I thought it would to unwind. So I started prepping the week before I went. And actually what I needed to do was prep that 2 weeks before I went. And that's a learning for next time. It took me a week to unwind and a week for clients to sort of get used to me not being available all the time. And then I enjoyed my second week a lot more because I'd kind of got things off my plate and I was then into holiday mode and then it was over. But during that time, I protected that very much for my family because I wanted to have those moments with them. And so I do tend to kind of impose little rules in my life to make sure, and I stick rigidly to it. So when I get an urge to check my phone or check an app, I just do that check before I actually click into it. And I'll go, what will this achieve? If I look at it, there'll be something in there that I want to do. So I have to make a conscious decision not to pick it up. And it's hard. It's really hard because as a business owner, if you're driven, it's very difficult to kind of resist that urge. But it's something that you absolutely have to do or you'll burn out. But the first year is hard in business. I've learned that. It's hard. You have to put a lot of hours in if you want to be successful. But if you can come to terms with that and you can find a way of making it work, then, it is absolutely possible.
Yeah, and it's something that a lot of consultants talk about, the hustle and the juggle of it all. Many come out to do consultancy to get better work-life balance and more flexibility. And then the reality in the first couple of years, and maybe even longer for some of us, is that actually you work harder, faster and longer than you've ever worked. And actually you become almost like a bit of a workaholic because your business is you and you are your business. And, you sort of take your business everywhere with you. And obviously something Pinky picked up on at the conference around actually separating yourself from the business and building those rules and those protection limits in to try and actually give yourself some time and protect your well-being.
Yeah, and I think it's twofold as well, because first of all, there's wanting to give an excellent service to clients. So you logging off at 5 o'clock if there's something to be done is just not an option because it is your brand. But then secondly, if you are driven and you are successful and you've got a steady stream of clients, I also think it's incredibly hard to turn work down. Because it's a feast or famine, it's that mindset of, gosh, I don't know if I will have this piece of work next week or the week after when I'm ready for it. Therefore, I'll take it on now. So I think it's twofold, definitely, Charlotte.
I think absolutely, sort of in terms of looking at it twofold, you get to a point in your consultancy journey that it's difficult to turn away work. And so it almost brings in the question of how do I, because the only limitation we all have is time.
Yeah.
Regardless of what we do, we can't increase the date more than 24 hours a day, unless it was like a couple of weeks ago when the clock changed and then you kind of just go an hour back or something.
Yeah.
But you can't change that. You can't change the 7 days in the week and so on and so forth. So you really get to a point where you need to weigh, how do I take on all this workload and balance being able to deliver them to the quality that I want my clients to have. And I guess that is the point, the growth point, where you start to almost decide or debate whether you go down the route of bringing an associate into your business to help you do some of that delivery, or whether you go on employing people or do a mixture of the two, so that you're still able to deliver and not turn away business.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you talked about the fact that you've explored both models. You've explored the associates, you've explored employment. Which one came first for you?
The associate model came first because I was at the point where I'd grown and it was going really well. And it was probably, I'd say around this time last year, it's just started to take off. And when it got to Christmas, I was just at the point where I was thinking, oh, if it carries on like this, I need to think about bringing some more help in. But again, it's somebody that, you know, you want to make sure they operate in your way and, you know, they've got the right level of experience, etc. So I ended up working with somebody that I knew within my HR community. And it got to the point where he was doing bits every week for me pretty much. And then it was that whole, oh, okay, there's some regularity here. It wasn't like a set number of hours, but there was definitely some regularity where I got to the point where I think I just outgrew. Well, it wasn't outgrew it. It was either a, am I going to go down a sole associate model? I've got limited control. I've got limited scope over when I can ask people to work or what I can ask people to do. People can turn it away. It's more expensive, but equally I can kind of switch it on and off because my business might need me to do that. Or do I just go for it and take an employee on? And I toyed with both options and I know people have done both. But I decided to go down the employee route because actually what I wanted to do was practice what I preach. I wanted to be the model employer as well. So I wanted to say, look, I've got a really good, healthy, growing HR consultancy, but actually we're also best in show. So the things that we ask you and advise you to do as employers are things that we do ourselves. And actually the proof's in the pudding because look, we've had people here that are really engaged, you know, and it's proof that it works. So I wanted to be able to turn that into a success story for clients. And I just think with associates, for me, the pace at which we were growing would have meant that I was constantly asking for associate help all the time. And we now have enough work to the point where we're recruiting another full-time member of the team. And, you know, we're crying out for the right person. So again, we've grown from being just me to being a team of four of us, including me, plus an associate who does on-site work in just a year. So that's quite, you know, quite significant growth.
Amazing. It really is amazing. Yeah.
So we'll be seeing you in the high growth category next year then, will we?
Hopefully. Hopefully. Absolutely.
Excellent. And another point I want to go to was right at the beginning, you talked about the fact that you met somebody who was near retirement. And then you had the opportunity to take on their clients, which helped kind of jumpstart your consultancy in a way. Can you talk about that further and the difference it made to you compared to if you were going out to win all those customers on your own?
Yeah, interestingly. So it was a good thing that I did. And then I also learned a lot from it. So when I needed the confidence to kind of kick off and do it myself, I did have a slight confidence issue because moving from the security of a regular salary and knowing what you've got coming in and knowing, you know, what you've got to spend every month was very attractive to me because I am one of those people that I like to know where I stand. So with it being so alien, the only way I could, you know, justify it to myself was to look at buying another small HR consultancy, you know, which was possible, and then adding those clients to the portfolio. And I had really no proper advice on it. I was trying to figure things out for myself. It's company law. It's a different area of law to what I practice. So I was quite in the dark with it and trying to do it also on a bit of a budget, quite a lot of a budget. So I was getting advice, but I wasn't getting lots of advice because I just couldn't pay for all the good advice, I suppose. Now, as it turns out, it wasn't a bad purchase at all. But I did learn an awful lot in terms of due diligence. And I did learn an awful lot in terms of what to look for if I was to do that again. I don't think everyone is in that position and is, you know, perhaps fortunate enough. I mean, I got a good deal, as I perceive to be a good deal. And for me, I think a good deal is, can you make the money that you paid on it back in about a year to a year and a half? And I think if you can't, then it maybe isn't a good deal. And that's just my sort of me sharing my experience on it. Now, as it happened, it wasn't actually the direct clients, because a few of them have stayed, but there was a lot of clients, I'd say probably 80% of them, that were ad hoc, that will probably be going elsewhere now, and they haven't come over to us. So I've still kind of set with the making the money back principle, and I've managed to do that. But that's through some indirect connections that other people have introduced me to that were relative to the business, but weren't directly part of the business. So the point I'm trying to make is that it was good to give me the confidence boost to go and do it. But actually, a lot of the business that I've generated now is all because of me and the brand that I've built. Mm-hmm. And ironically, not because of the business that I purchased.
Great stuff. Thank you for that.
It's interesting because I was approached many years ago and asked if I wanted to buy somebody else's consultancy. And they wanted a huge amount of money for the business. And they were still, even while they were negotiating, still signing up new clients on the basis that they were going to deliver it for a year or 2 year contract. And it just didn't sit very well because you think actually they've just signed up to you. And if they don't take to me, then, you know, we're into some contractual difficulties. And I think it was probably a little bit disingenuous to do that. But the value that they were asking, you couldn't make the return.
No. And I think, you know, I'd be open to doing it again. But I know so much more this time round, and I would definitely know what I needed to look out for and what some of the red flags would be. And I just know so much more now. I'd feel a lot more prepared to do it again. I don't mind business development. In fact, I'm quite good at it, but it's not the thing that gets me out of bed in the morning. It's not the thing that I have passion for, but I know it goes with the territory.
Yeah, it's great. So what's the biggest thing that you've learned over the sort of time of your business growing?
I've learned, I think, to be financially and commercially aware at all times. So when I first set up, there was always people ringing me, badgering me to sell things to me. And I know that was their job and I fully respect that. But you tend to get hammered by people who almost take advantage of the fact you're a new business owner and try and create needs for things you don't necessarily have a need for at that time or maybe never will. And I wouldn't say I got drawn in, but I did end up subscribing to something that was a complete waste of time. And I think I just felt flattered and, you know, a bit overwhelmed at the time. So I think the biggest thing is, you know, following on from the business purchase as well. So the due diligence that I would do again if I was in that position. But secondly, you know, check your finances every month. There's things that you will pay, little invoices here and there. You might think it's £20 here or £40 there. It's nothing, but it does all add up. And I've got some really good accountancy software where it's a dashboard and I can visually see like the greens and the reds. And for someone like me who really can read graphs and I like that display of information in that way, I find it very helpful to kind of trend whether I'm doing well or not at a glance. And I can kind of see things that I need to be chasing up or looking at. So every month, you know, I do a reconciliation. I do my own finances. I have help from a very good accountant, but I make sure I check it. And it's making sure that you're always chasing cash flow. Cash flow is everything in your business. I used to be a director in an accountancy practice looking after HR and employment law. And that was one thing that my time there taught me was, you know, cash flow is often a reason that a business will go under. You know, make sure you get your invoices out diligently because the client can't pay you without them, and make sure you chase them and have good relationships with people. And then on the flip side of that, make sure you are rationalising what you spend and getting value for money out of everything that you buy.
Yeah, cash flow is And sort of understanding finance is also very important to running a successful business, as you just pointed out. And it's important to know that as a business owner, you owe it to yourself to understand your finances and what it means to your business, but also to rely on the experts, like have a good accountant as a right wing man that or woman that or person, right wing person that you can lean on to say, hey, this is whatever, what do you think? And sort of get their advice the same way as you'd expect them to get HR people's advice when they need it from yourself. So that is very important. What would you say has been your most, we've asked you about your challenge, but your most treasured experience in your journey so far?
I think it was finding the right team to work with me. So I absolutely love the people that I work with. I have so much time and respect for them. And part of the reason that I wanted to do this was to make a great company to work for. And I wanted to be able to live and breathe it. And that's something that I've sort of mentioned already. But when I get up and I sort of go onto our team chat, you know, we sort of, you know, happy Monday, or today it's happy Tuesday. You know, our chats are, you know, really professional. We, you know, we talk about all kinds of different things, but it's just a really nice environment. And, you know, in return, you know, it is my job to make sure that we have cash in the bank to pay people on time. You know, I take that responsibility very seriously as an employer. Make sure I pay my suppliers on time, you know, and I can honestly say we've never, ever been late paying a supplier ever, not even by a day, because it's just not the right way to do business. So I think having those, that strong value set, and wanting to make sure that I am, you know, a responsible business owner, but I also care greatly. And that is then reflected in the fact that, you know, the team tried their very best to keep stuff away from me when I was on holiday, because they know that I kind of will, you know, I just kind of struggled to tear myself away from it because it is my baby. But they made a real effort and they sent me the most lovely birthday gift. And I make sure that I get to know them, you know, things that, you know, I don't ask for things. They just do things for me because they respect me. And I do things for them because I respect them. And in turn, that means that we've got a lovely environment where people are just happy to help out. If there's a job to be done, it's not, well, that's not my level, that's not my what I do. It's okay, sure, pass it over. And that is very much how we work, and that is absolutely the culture that I want to work with going forward, and something that, you know, makes me incredibly proud. And I want to, you know, make sure I you know, keep rewarding people that work with me, because I wouldn't be able to do what I do without them.
Right.
Amazing. Well done. So what's next? So how are we going to get you into this high growth category for the award next year? What's on the horizon?
Well, I've got some exams to do, some legal exams to do in January. So I'm sort of focusing on those at the minute. We've got another team member to recruit. So they're kind of the next two immediate milestones. And then I would say, as we sort of move into January or quarter one of next year, we're going to kind of carry on with the business development activity we're doing and have some more face-to-face team meetings. So what we've said is we meet every week and we do lots of CPD together, but once a quarter we're going to meet face-to-face. And I think we're going to be more visible at business expos and just get out there once I've now, you know, built the team up to the point where we can do more of that face-to-face stuff. So yeah, watch this space. That's where we're going, because people buy from people, you know, as much as they love your brand, they'll buy because they want to work with you and the team that you work with.
Great. Excellent. Sounds very exciting. And what would be your top tips for sort of anyone listening to our podcast that's sort of thinking about becoming a consultant or thinking about taking those next steps for business growth? What would be, let's say, three of your top tips?
I think, first of all, define how you want to be a consultant, whether you want to be an associate or whether you want to actually go it alone and build your own consultancy. And that's really important, because then you will network with the people that you need to. So if you want to be more of an associate, maybe you go to less business expos and you would target more people in like the HR Indies group, for example, and build relationships with them. I'd also say that, love it or hate it, I think networking is a really good thing. Networking has been a slow burn for me, but if you find the right group and the right professionals, then, you know, that is a really good way to kickstart the business. But it does take time. And thirdly, whatever you think it might take you financially to start it up, I'd say add an extra 50% on, just to allow yourself the headspace if you are having a bit of a lull or a quiet moment where you aren't panicking and then picking up low value work and hoovering all of that up for clients that maybe don't know your worth or value you enough, and then consequently end up becoming the clients that are most unhappy with you because they wanted to do it on such a tight budget and it just wasn't possible. So I think be picky about what you pick up. That would be my third tip.
Right. Thank you so much, Laura, for coming to speak to us. It's been really fantastic listening to you and learning a lot more about, or a bit more about, your experience. The best of luck for the year ahead, and we can't wait to see what the future holds for you, your team, and your business. And thank you very much for tuning in and for listening to us. Would love to hear from you. So please do get in touch at hrvoices@hrindependent.co.uk. If you have a topic that you'd like us to discuss, or if you want to come on as a guest or recommend somebody you love listening to come on and speak to us. Thank you, and speak to you and see you again soon.
See you soon. Thank you. Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of HR Voices. If you have a topic you'd like us to cover or would like to be a guest, we'd love to hear from you. Connect with us on social media or email us at hrvoices@hrindependence.co.uk. Tune in next time.